This is South Beach Sessions, and I'm the executive producer of South Beach Sessions, Mike Ryan. Dan, last week we had Billy Ray Cyrus on, and it was just a bunch of flash paper. It was fun. It was inside. It was a laugh riot. This week, we're talking to a mathematician.
That's right. We're going to slow it down. The pace was too fast last week. It was too crazy. Billy Ray Cyrus just wanted to talk about Pete Rose and nothing else. And so I said I wanted to be a little more elevated with the discussion. And this dude has fascinated me for a long time. He's a former offensive lineman who is now a mathematician. And we're talking about one of these high-end mathematicians where he does math. Maybe not Good Will Hunting type math, maybe not Beautiful Mind type of math, but he knows a great deal about complexities in mathematics that I'm sure you guys don't think you're interested in as we start this, because people hate math. But I do think you're going to find this guy interesting, where he makes it to the top of football, he makes it to the top of math, and he seems to like math a lot more than he liked football. And the degree of difficulty on both of those things is very high.
So he does math for fun?
He does math because he wants to get better at math.
What?
That's right.
But what's the end game here,
Spence? The end game is to be great at math. That's the end game. So tell the people about the sponsor. I'm telling you, what we want to do with these South Beach sessions is vary them. You don't know what's coming. And this one, I'm telling you, even if you're not interested in math, just like perhaps you weren't interested in MMA when we talked to Ariel Helwani, even if you're not interested in math, I think you're going to find interesting that this guy rather do a math problem than be with his wife sometimes, because his wife understands him, understands that he's an unusual mind, and understands that he can spend 9 hours with a problem and not notice her, which is another kind of problem.
That's a different problem.
That he's going to have to deal with later in life. But right now he says his wife loves and understands him. So let's get to that.
Dan, sometimes you want to hire somebody that's good at math. And you know where you go?
Where?
ZipRecruiter.com/beach. Thank you for answering the question, Chris Cody. I've noticed on the Mystery Crate podcast, you're getting pretty good with the ad-libs.
I was curious where you meant.
All right. Well, it is very challenging. I'm talking about hiring. And to find qualified candidates, it can sometimes take a very long time. Too many applicants and the whole deal. ZipRecruiter makes it easy. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/beach. Multiple job sites, they stack these resumes, and it's a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place. The aforementioned ZipRecruiter.com/beach. ZipRecruiter sends your jobs to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there, Chris Cody.
No, they don't.
I love that. Ad lib, Chris Cody. With a powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of those resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. And as those applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each and every one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. Right now, South Beach Session listeners, we implore you to check out ZipRecruiter.
Right now, Chris. Right now.
For free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/beach. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEACH. ZipRecruiter.com/beach. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You guys need to do that right now. You're not doing it right now. Go do it right now. You're too late. Now is not now. You're late on now.
Yeah,
right
you missed
now.
It. You
right
missed
now.
It.
It. Right now.
So now you're going to have to listen to the South Beach Session at the very end. Then you're going to have to do this.
Here's right. John Urschel. I've been fascinated by this guy for a while because his journey is an unusual one, and I was always curious how he fit in an NFL locker room, because John Urschel is extraordinarily good at math. He's got a new book, Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. It's available now, and I wanted to talk to him about how these two things coexisted, because he's not only unusual as being a football player who is this good at math, but also in being an African-American who is leading the way mathematically when you've got something like 15, I think, in the United States, doctorates in economics among African-Americans. So John Urschel is with us, and I thank you for being on with us. And I'm just curious if you thought early on in your life that your interest in this was unusual.
No, I didn't actually. I never really had that level of self-reflection. I have to say that, especially when I was younger, I did things because I enjoyed them, and I didn't really think anything of it. And so my sort of passion in mathematics and my passion in football, I didn't think this was particularly strange. And to your second point, being an African-American in mathematics, I didn't really think anything of this. But now that I have a little bit of sort of distance, and now that I sort of understand the landscape better, it's actually a really interesting problem, this sort of lack of African-American mathematicians at the highest level. Who knows exactly why this is? But it's very clear that this is a problem, because it means that we're really losing so many young, brilliant minds simply because they're being born into the wrong household in this country.
So when you say, though, who knows why it happens, isn't that why it happens? I don't know. I don't know either. But if you had to have a best theory, it's because very often environment, it's just not going to be part of the imprinting.
Yeah, I think so. But again, I can't be certain. But this is what I do feel comfortable saying. There's clearly something that happens that, in my opinion, is really done by the time a kid, you know, is in high school, that this happens before a kid even steps foot on a college campus, that somehow the household you're born into and sort of the educational system that you're a part of, well, I mean, it might come as no surprise that this has a very large impact on sort of what you achieve and what you do.
When did you know, though, that it was strange specifically not to be a football player and a math dude? Because I think it might be rarer to be your level of accomplished, statistically, to be a black dude who's better at math than almost everybody.
It didn't even hit me, really, until I was at MIT, I have to say. So my whole life, my interactions with mathematics have been very strange. I've almost never learned math in the classroom. What I mean by that is, almost every time that I'm learning something for the first time, it's a very personal experience. It's me reading math from a book, and it's me and mathematics, no one else. And so I find that sort of in my math career, I didn't really look around at other mathematicians and sort of think like, wow, none of them look like me.
Wait a minute. You weren't remembering that you were black in every room you were walking into, even though it had to be the loneliest thing in the world to be the only black dude anywhere you were going?
Of course I remember that, you know, in these math environments, yes, I'm the only black person there. But it's not lonely because I'm there with mathematics. Like, mathematics truly was and truly is, it's something that I'm very close with. My experiences with math were extremely personal in the sense that when I was in these classrooms with everyone else, like in some math class where I am the only African-American, I don't look at it and say, wow, I'm the only African-American in this class. I just look at it as, wow, it's me and all these other people who really love math. This idea of, like, I'm a different race than all of these other people, this doesn't even cross my mind. Whereas this would cross my mind in other circumstances. But I do want to say that my experience is very unique and atypical. And this is what I came to realize when I was at MIT. When, you know, at MIT was the first time I actually got to talk to a lot of other African-American mathematicians who would sort of either come visit, or they have heard about me now that I'm at MIT, or even African-American undergrads who are majoring in math and thinking, maybe I want to be a mathematician, that it's a very lonely thing I've come to find. That often it's really discouraging when you look at a field and all of the people that are at an elite level in that field don't look like you. And when your classmates don't look like you. And often when you're in these classes and you already feel like you're behind the eight ball, like everyone knows so much more than you, and you feel like you're the worst student in the class because, you know, maybe your background wasn't as strong as someone else's. You didn't take part in, like, mathematics Olympiad when you were a kid. You didn't have these opportunities. And you feel like you're the worst student in the class and you're behind. And you add on top of that, that you're the only African-American in the class. Now, all of a sudden, this is such a lonely feeling. And I've come to realize that my experience is not the norm. That is the norm.
You've got people coming from all over to see you because you're an inspiration, because they want to seek out someone who looks like them. You're a phenomenon that people want to come and talk to because you're that unusual.
pilgrimage is like a strong word. I mean, listen, I'm not Jesus, but like I.
It's such a strong word that I can't say it. That's how strong a word.
Yes, it's a strong word that I certainly don't deserve. But when I say sort of like would-be mathematicians, when I say these undergrads, these are African-American undergrads at MIT. They don't have to travel very far. And
okay.
These are sort of, you know, African-American mathematicians who are visiting MIT. So here's the thing. MIT and, you know, Princeton and some of these other places, they're sort of hubs for mathematics in the following sense. People come and they give talks about the research that they do. And oftentimes, like a place like MIT, you have so many different people coming in and out every single day, coming to present their work, that you get to see just a lot of mathematicians, a lot of elite mathematicians that you don't really see the same, you know, traffic, let's say, at Penn State. And so because so many mathematicians visit MIT, I got to interact with a lot more African-American mathematicians than I did at Penn State. In fact, I got to interact with African-American mathematicians, should be what I'm saying, because I didn't interact with any at Penn State.
When did you know that you had a gift for this?
That's a great question. And gift feels like a strong word, but if I look back, I think I've always had talent in math. I think I didn't always realize it, and I didn't realize it was unusual until I got to college, and in particular, I was taking a college course taught by a math professor, a guy by the name of Vadim Kaloshin, and he decided that my talent seemed unusual. And he decided that, no, I think this young guy might be quite good at math, and I'm going to take it upon myself to mentor him. And he did. He introduced me to mathematical research. He taught me what a mathematician was. And if it wasn't for him, I almost certainly wouldn't be a mathematician. And he didn't have to do that. That's not part of his job description. He didn't get anything out of it. It's not like him doing this for me advances his career. He did it because he loves mathematics and he loved sharing mathematics with other people.
But at this point, you didn't know you were special, at least in part, because you just simply loved it, right? And so there was no one telling you that you were special at it. What would you have to compare it against?
Exactly. It's just me doing math and, okay, some people say, well, how don't you know you're special? Yes. I understood that when I was in high school, I was the strongest math student in all my classes. But this doesn't make me special. There are tons of high schools all over the country, and there's a strongest student in all of these high schools. And, you know, this doesn't mean that you're, like, a special talent. First of all, I don't know if I'm a special talent. I don't even know what that means. But I didn't realize that, you know, math could really be my, like, true career, my calling, until it took a mathematician seeing me and saying, John, you can do this. John, I see potential in you. And, you know, I'm so much better for it. I'm so grateful for that. And yes, that's sort of a great story, but I always try to think of the flip side of it, which is it's a very sobering realization when you realize that so often these stories of people who, let's say, weren't planning on becoming mathematicians, people who sort of came from non-standard backgrounds, that it always involves one mathematician noticing them, seeing that they have potential, and taking them under their wing. This is the common story that you hear over and over again when you talk to someone who became a mathematician, but let's say didn't know that they were going to be an elite person in, you know, in a math, physics, computer science field, let's say when they graduated high school.
But is it the Goodwill Hunting story? You know what I mean? At its most extreme, where somebody in an environment like Matt Damon is, you know, solving problems that no one else can solve, and it takes someone to take an interest in him and that to realize the genius in it.
I mean, Goodwill Hunting and Matt Damon, this is taken to an extreme. First of all, my favorite math movie ever, I have to say. So I appreciate the reference. But
there aren't many math movies. Like, well, how many are there? A lot of math movies. I feel like that's a real lonely Oscar category.
Well, you've got A Beautiful Mind. A lot of people like that one.
Do you hate those movies because they're just sensationalized or glamorized or ridiculous, or do you like them?
It's just not my favorite. You got the Imitation Game. I mean, okay, we've got some big ones. Imitation Game. This had Keira Knightley in it. You have
John, I was simply making a joke that there aren't a lot of math movies. That's, I was just making a joke.
Sorry, I mean, you bring it up, and now, you know, I want to start thinking about math movies. I have to say, I don't know, I like Good Will Hunting. It's quite a good movie, I think.
Okay.
I, as you can see, I easily can get sort of, if you just, like, sort of give me a little nudge, I will go off on a tangent.
Well, but you have an unusual mind. This is what I want to talk to you about, though, because I find your mind to be fascinating. So explain to the audience, if you don't mind, in layman's terms that we can understand just how good you are at math, because America's got a math problem. Like, your level of math is not in any way normal. So how do you explain it to somebody who doesn't understand?
First of all, that's a great question. It's hard to explain because, first of all, it's just hard to explain the landscape of any field that, you know, someone isn't familiar with. But I would say that me being a PhD student at MIT, my classmates are some of the most brilliant people I've ever met. Like, I'm lucky to be in class with people who, let's say, win the International Math Olympiad, which, for people who don't know what this is like the premier high school math competition where students from all across the world are competing for first place. And, you know, these are my classmates, people who won the gold medal or won the silver medal and things like this. And I have to say, it's an amazing environment to be in at MIT around some of the world's most brilliant people. And I walk to work every day and I'm just in awe of sort of the environment I get to be in.
Which doesn't explain to me how great you are at math and doesn't explain to the audience how great specifically you are. Now, you are saying they are brilliant minds. What you're not saying is that you're one of them.
Well, I don't know if I'm one of them. I think I am a good mathematician. I think I do good work. I think that, you know, I'm hardworking. Also, I'm very young in my career. And so I think sort of the final word on this topic will probably be said decades from now. Let's see what I do.
And what do you intend to do? Like, let's say if we're talking about legacy building and you say, let's see what I do. If all of your dreams come true along this path, whatever your ambitions are, what does 20 years from now look like?
20 years from now looks like, first of all, me doing the same thing I'm doing right now, which is me learning about math, me solving math problems, and me teaching young people. But hopefully along the way, I've solved a number of sort of open and interesting and important math problems.
Historically important math problems.
Yeah. But important math.
You're not being falsely modest here, though, right? You're expressing honest doubt about whether you are this kind of prodigy who can 20 years from now, you know, be a Hall of Famer at math.
Exactly. And there should be doubt. There should be a lot of doubt. First of all, I know for a fact I don't have as much talent as some of the other people at MIT. I do know that I think I'm harder working. I think that I have a high level of creativity, which is quite important in mathematics. And I think I simply love math. But it's really, you never know like when lightning is going to strike because you're trying to solve these hard math problems. These things have been open for so many years for a reason. So many people have been trying to solve these problems and have failed for a reason. And you could be a very brilliant person and not solve a certain problem. Or you could be someone not as smart, but perhaps you happen to figure out the right technique. It's tough to say. Where I'm at right now, I think my PhD is going extremely well. I feel like I'm a strong PhD student. I would equate it to, you know, if you are trying to talk to, let's say, a surgeon or someone like this, you can't really judge how good the surgeon is while he's still in his residency.
Harder working. When you say I'm harder working than others, can you give me something that makes me understand that? What does that mean? How many hours a day? What level of obsessive compulsive do you have to be? And I'm guessing that some of that comes from football and being able to traverse pain and everything that you had to do there.
It absolutely comes from football. It's a resiliency to stick with a problem and keep trying in the face of constant failure. Mathematics is a field where perhaps I'm trying to solve some very tough problem. I might try 99 different techniques and fail, and then fail the 100th time too, and somehow have to be able to tell myself, let's sit back, let's think about this, and let's try something new. and to have that resiliency in the face of constant failure.
And so harder working means what?
It means sort of spending more hours on mathematics. It means spending more time. And it means not just harder working, but also being more resilient.
But how consumed are you by it is what I'm asking you. I'm asking you a very simple math problem. Yeah. John works 20 hours a day obsessing over a problem, or works hard, works smart. I'm asking you for some sort of quantification of how hard you work.
Let's see. I would say I spend about 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, thinking about math exclusively.
And do you find that confining, or do you still love it every bit as much as you did the first time you took up an interest in it?
I absolutely love it. It's what I love to do. It's my passion, and the only other thing that I would say that I'm quite passionate about right now is raising my daughter, which takes up quite a bit of time as well.
Well, I was going to ask you, because you met your wife in an unusual fashion, and it's a great fashion to meet her, where she's curious in you. She writes about you for Grantland, and her curiosity stimulates whatever it is that it stimulates. And I wonder, as all of that is happening, if your wife understands you, or does she appreciate you, even though she can't understand you because you're an unusual human being?
I think she does understand me. I think she understands my wants, my needs, my desires. I think she understands the type of person I am. And I think she truly does understand what's important to me.
Because that can be a hard connection point with women in relationships, right? The path
you
took.
No, of course. And she, I mean, from when we even first started dating, she understood that math came first. She really explicitly understood this, and she understood how important it was to me. I mean, these days I have to say that now math comes second. I mean, my daughter comes first, and I'm very happy to have that shift. Math still comes second.
That's unusual to say, right? It's unusual to say out loud, math comes before my wife.
She knows this. She knows this, and she supports this, and, you know, she supports who I am, and she loves who I am, and I love her as well, and I'm eternally grateful that she understands that, you know, if I have some math problem that I just can't get out of my head and I feel like I'm making progress on, I am going to cancel any plans I have with her. I am going to, like, work, like, through the night, and, like, she understands that. I mean, before we had our daughter, okay, now that we have our daughter, things are different. Before we had our daughter, she would, you know, make dinner, and she would come over to MIT just to, like, bring me dinner, have dinner with me, and then leave and go to bed.
And how cool was that? Is that how you knew? Is that because you can't really be with a woman who doesn't understand that, John? You can't stay with a woman. It'd be almost impossible to stay with somebody that you were trying to explain to and didn't understand. Hey, math comes before you, period. This is who I am.
I'm not sure I want to say it sort of that clear cut. I mean, there's, you know, there's nuance. I mean, if she really needs me for something, of course I'm there. It's just that, you know, math is really this great passion in my life. And I think it's not just me being sort of passionate with mathematics. One of the things that, like, really drew me to my wife is how passionately she spoke about writing and the level of fire she had when she talked about writing about certain subjects, when she talked about projects she had in mind, beautiful pieces of work that she's fascinated by. And that, I think, more than anything, is what drew me to her, that I felt like she was as passionate about writing. And I should say, my wife is a sports writer, but I'm not talking about sports writing. I'm talking about her writing in historical nonfiction and sort of her fascination with sort of literary works. This is what, you know, really sort of drew me to her, is that I felt like her passion in that really paralleled my passion in math. And so it wasn't like sort of issue of like math coming first. It was very natural because math is extremely important and coming first in my life, and writing is very important and coming first in her life.
What is it that she found so fascinating? If she likes writing so much, how is she ending up on your doorstep writing about her fascination with you? Something led her there.
Yes, yes. And I understand the question fully. I simply, I can't answer for her. I have no clue.
You haven't asked.
I'd
just be curious, why did she find me so interesting that she wanted to write about me? What is it that she finds interesting?
Well, I have to admit that I'm not sure. I mean, okay, I'm not really sure why, you know, I'm not really that fundamentally interesting. I actually try to tell people my life is actually extremely boring. It's very mundane. I love my life, but it's not fundamentally that interesting. And so I don't really understand why a lot of people want to sort of interview me and talk to me sort of at a deep level. And so I guess I suppose I chalk it up to me not understanding. She's not the only one, I should say.
Degree of difficulty. Which one is more difficult, arriving where you have in math or arriving where you did in football?
Football, at least for me. I, to this day, believe that I had more math talent than I did football talent. Getting to where I was in my football career took a lot of hard work.
And pain,
and
right?
Of course, and pain and sort of setbacks. I'll be the first to admit I'm not the greatest athlete. You know, I don't have the greatest numbers. It took a lot of just hard work and dedication. And yeah, and I have to say, like, I loved my football career. And, you know, looking back, you know, I have amazing memories. But I definitely think I have more talent in math than football. I feel very comfortable saying.
Did you like problem solving in football, too? Is that part of why you loved football the way you did? Because you couldn't have loved the pain involved.
You know, I kind of did. It's going to sound so strange. I just really used to like hitting people a lot. I really, like, there was something about it I really enjoyed.
Oh, wow. So it's not the problem solving. It's you like the violence. You like hitting people.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I don't ask me why. I couldn't tell you why I did. But I really did. I mean, I think this sort of wore off a little bit in my later years. I think I'm a much milder person than I used to be. But yes, initially, especially as a high schooler, man, let me tell you, I really just loved hitting people.
Have you explored that at all, though? Like whether that came from anger, whether there were any repressed emotions there, or if it was simply you like it for the same reason you might like this piece of food. I just like it, period. There's no need to examine it.
Perhaps there's a need to examine it. I haven't. I have felt no need to examine it, especially because I have to say I don't feel that way anymore.
And what happened? Where did it go?
I don't know. Maybe it went away a little bit with age. Maybe it went away a little bit with sort of calming down and being sort of, you know, more refined. I have to say that Louisa has really, she's been a great influence on my life. She has really sort of calmed me down in many ways. I'm a much milder person having met her.
How so?
I'm much more content to just sit, whereas sort of previously I was always very on the go, very sort of my mind constantly moving from thing to thing to thing, much more aggressive. Whereas now I think I am much softer.
Is it a restlessness? Is it born of anxiety?
Yes, I think it is a restlessness. And I have to say, I don't feel nearly as restless these days. And, you know, even just my mindset back then to now, back then I was so obsessive about the things I did to such an extreme degree. Whereas now, yes, I'm obsessive about problems, but it's much healthier, and I think it's in a much milder way.
If you can only have one, if I took one of them from you as a life experience.
I'll take math.
Oh, wow, that was quick. You got there fast.
Yeah, I'll take math. Yes, I will take math. I have to say that, yeah, football has done so much for me. I mean, football is the place where I've met, like, all my best friends in the world. But mathematics has really sort of given me something special and will continue to for many, many years.
Why have you not gotten the same sort of friendships from math that you did from football?
One, I think when I was younger, at a time where these are very much your formative years, where you're much more likely to build close friendships. I'll admit I spent a lot more time on football than math because I had to. I had to spend a lot of time to be a good football player. And in addition, I think the environment of football lends itself to a level of closeness that you don't see in mathematics, at least at the college level.
Do you in some way regret that because you could have been working on problems much earlier and been further down this particular path that you're so eager to be down?
No, I have to say that I'm very happy with exactly the path I took. I mean, you're asking me questions about how good of a mathematician I am and sort of all these things. I have to say, however good of a mathematician I end up being, I'm happy with. And I wouldn't trade sort of like being a much better mathematician for the experiences I had in football. Because my experiences in football, this is where I met some of my best friends in the world. This is where sort of I've really learned a lot of skills that I don't think I would have if I was simply sitting in a room studying math all day and not interacting with people. I don't think I'd be capable of having the exact conversation I'm having with you now.
Huh, that's interesting. You needed the locker room in order to socialize yourself because your instincts in math would be to go be alone with the problem.
Yes. In math, I'm very much an isolationist. I like being just me, myself, and the problem. And for instance, you know, in college, this is when I was, you know, much more extreme. I would be up late, you know, on a Saturday night, you know, in my office. It would be like 1 a.m. and my friends would come from the bars to come to my office sometimes to get me, to bring me out so that I could be there for last call.
You just get so lost in it, and they have to come drag you. They have to drag you out of this world you love so much so that you could go have human connection instead of connections with numbers.
I mean, I was happy that they would drag me. I mean, these are my best friends in the world. I mean, I have to say, like, my best friend, this guy, Ty Howell, he's an offensive coordinator at Western Illinois. This man kept me social in college. It was my closest friends who kept me social, because other than my very closest friends, I had no interest in talking to anyone. It's my closest friends and doing math, and I'm not really that interested in other people or other things.
You could go, because math creates such unusual personalities, because it has some of this stuff in it, and you have to be a little bit different to be really great at this thing. You could have easily gone down a path without that socialization where you became a totally different human being that was a bit of a math robot, like many other math robots, where that is all there is to life, is the math.
I think I would have been much worse off for it. I mean, okay, first of all, I have to say that, yes, I know people where all they have is math and all they do is math. And that's great. And that's great for them if they enjoy that. But I have to say that I think I'm better for the path that I've taken, and know that sort of this path of sort of only math, this is not the only way to be a good mathematician.
What did football teach you when you think of the lessons and you think of the experiences beyond that socialization? What are some of the things that you learned that have helped you be a more balanced human being as you are deeper into adulthood and are now a father?
I would say that, first of all, football is where I learned how to be a part of a team, how to be a part of something bigger than myself. I mean, my whole time going through school, my whole time learning mathematics, I almost had no interactions in which I'm working with a bunch of other people towards some greater goal that perhaps is greater than myself and just my own interests. And I think this served me well when I got to higher levels of mathematics and I started collaborating with other mathematicians.
Is there money in math?
So this is a good question. Yes and no. There's actually a lot of money in math, but it's not in academia. So, for instance, let's say at MIT, we look at, you know, all the graduating PhD students. Most of us go into academia to do research and to teach. But some of us go work for tech companies like Google, like Amazon. Some of us go work in finance. And I will say, I know one of my friends who is going to work in finance, and I think their starting salary is about to be like $500,000, having no background in finance. Their background is like in pure mathematics. So a finance company is saying, yes, we like you. We know that you don't know hardly any of the skills that we need you to know, but you will learn those, and we think you're like this valuable.
Here's $500,000. We think you can rig our system just because you're that good at math. Here's $500,000.
Yeah. I think that's something that people need to hear, to know that being really good at math or at a quantitative field, I mean, okay, let alone math, being really good at something like computer science, this is lucrative as well as very fulfilling if you want it to be. I mean, I have to say that I will be an academic. I will not be making money like that, and I'm quite content with that.
It sounds like you see nobility in math and problem solving, and it sounds like you have sort of a utopian version of where you want to take math. It sounds, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you're refusing any money, but you kind of like the nobility in I'm doing math for the purest of reasons.
If someone wants to pay me more money, know that I'll take more money. But, yeah, I'm not out here trying to find, like, every penny I can. I mean, listen, I have to admit, I played in the NFL. I made a good amount of money. I've hardly spent any of it. I don't buy stuff. I mean, the things I buy, like, math books. I buy coffee at coffee shops. It's very hard to like, blow a lot of money when these are the things that you're spending your money on. It's really hard.
How many math books do you have? I buy all my obsession, my big vice is I just keep buying math books.
Yeah, no, like, I have, like, probably, like 100 or maybe, like, 150 math books.
Why did you write your own book? If it's not money, right, because you don't seem to be motivated by that, why are you writing A Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football? Who do you want to read it?
Really, my intended audience was for high schoolers, ideally. If I had to really pinpoint an area, I wanted to write this book to share sort of my journey with mathematics, my interactions with mathematics, and I wanted to share this to a broad audience. And I would be remiss if I only talked about this and didn't share my sort of experiences in football. And that's why you see this book containing both these things. But really, this book is me sort of wanting to share my experiences with mathematics and also show how beautiful mathematics is. I want to be a very good mathematician. This is important to me. But something that's also very important to me is to try to help bring along young mathematicians, bring along young minds, show them the things you can do with math, that you can do with science. And I think I have a responsibility to do this, especially given that I played in the NFL. And I'm given a platform that a lot of people who perhaps might be much more deserving don't have.
John, thank you for sharing your story with us. I do appreciate it. I do find you fascinating. I find you interesting because your path, it's not just that your path is unusual. It's all the particles in the path that make you a really unique individual. So thank you for being on with us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Seriously, I want to say thank you for having me. This is one of the most enjoyable conversations I've had sort of on air in quite some time. I really appreciate it.
Likewise.